And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What?
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Santa Barbara and Ventura Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is success or failure. Each of my guests is pointing out that thin line between success or failure in their particular area of interest. Both the Washington Post and the New York Times has named my next guest the Dean of Gun Lobbyists. He is the Public Affairs Director of the Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. We're going to discuss California Assembly Bill 144 that prohibits openly carrying firearms and other Second Amendment issues. And as always, if you want to call in, you have a comment or a question about anything that we're talking about, you can call us at 639-0008. John Schneider is the author of Gun Saint, a book that about a canonized Catholic saint who used handguns in 1860 to rescue Italian villagers from a gang of terrorists. He has been quoted extensively and testified before Congress and various state legislatures in defense of carrying firearms. John has written about the merits of ordinary, responsible citizens bearing arms to protect themselves and their communities. John is the Public Affairs Director of the Citizens Committee for the Right to Bear and Keep Arms. He's also the chairman of the St. Gabriel Panessi Society and Vice President of the National Association of Chiefs of Police. Joining us from Washington, D.C. Hi, John. How are you today?
I'm just fine, Bill. I hope you're fine, too. Hope your audience is great, too.
Doing great out here. Of course, it's California. It's always wonderful out here. But I wanted to bring you on because truly you are the thought leader when it comes to gun lobbyists. And we've got something going on right now in the California Assembly, which is a little bit interesting. And it certainly created a lot of interest here in California. And that's a new bill in front of the California Assembly, Assembly Bill number 144. And that aims to prohibit the rights of California citizens to openly bear and display unloaded firearms. And let me just set it up for you, John. There have been four previous attempts in the past 7 years to limit this exact same thing. The bill AB 144 contains a whole list of exemptions, so it's not going to be widespread. It will exempt law enforcement officers. It will exempt military personnel. It will exempt veteran organizations that are participating in parades. It will exempt hunters, et cetera, et cetera. But even so, the measure is backed by the state police chiefs. As they pointed out, it puts police officers in a dangerous situation if you can't determine if a gun is loaded or unloaded. And proponents of the bill argue you don't need a gun to buy a cheeseburger. Now, opponents of the bill, which include the NRA, claim that it violates the Second Amendment rights. They also claim that concealed weapon licenses are very hard to come by in California, and this will inevitably lead to more people carrying concealed weapons, and that that's going to lead us down the very slippery slope of revoking Second Amendment rights. So as the Dean of Gun Lobbyists, what are your thoughts about what's happening out here in California, John?
Well, generally speaking, I think that California is unique in that if the people in large enough numbers object to this bill, if it is passed by the state legislature finally and then signed by the governor, the people in the state do have the option of not only going through the courts to rectify that situation, but if they want, they can go the direct democracy route. I understand you have a lot of referenda in California.
Constantly, constantly, John. Yes.
Yes. Well, I would imagine, without having been in California since last September, that if enough people object to this bill, if it is signed, that is a lot of firearms owners in California and a lot of other people who don't want to see their rights infringed like this, they could go the direct democracy route and go on and try to get a referendum on the ballot sometime in the near future. I don't see why the powers that be in California or any other state should really object to law-abiding citizens carrying unloaded firearms openly. But that's democracy, and these battles constantly are being fought at various levels in our society, including and especially right now at the state level. So that's what I think California is going through right now.
Sure. We're talking to John Schneider, and that's exactly the reason I brought you on, John, is because you give us more of a national picture, you know, because California is not alone in gun control actions that are going on out there. So from your perspective as the dean of gun lobbyists, kind of give us an overview of what's happening in the United States. What's the mood of the country, of people in other states, about gun control?
Right now, the mood generally seems to be a desire on the part of lots of people to overturn firearm laws that exist, or to do things that further increase the Second Amendment right rights of law-abiding citizens to keep and bear arms. For instance, in on the other side of the country, from your point of view, in Florida recently, the state legislature passed and the governor signed a bill that curtails doctors who are anti-gun in their perspective from asking their patients if they have guns in their home. This had been thought of by firearms owners as an attempt on the part of some doctor and doctor groups to intimidate patients regarding their ownership of firearms. Now, as you're probably aware, the United States Supreme Court in the last few years have overturned anti-gun laws in the District of Columbia and in the city of Chicago. As a result of these criteria established by the Supreme Court regarding the individual Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms, there is a lot of activity in the courts on the part of firearms groups seeking to overturn various state and local ordinances and statutes regarding the carrying of firearms in the United States. So I also, there's another thing that's evidence of this that comes not directly from the legislative branch, but from a more sociological perspective. And that is, and this is something that people generally don't know, there are about 100 million gun owners in the United States who own about 200 or more firearms, that is, shotguns, rifles, and handguns. And according to the statistics kept by the FBI regarding the request for criminal background checks on the part of people who are buying firearms from licensed firearms dealers, there probably are about 12 or 14 million new guns purchased in the United States legally each year. So the gun-owning population is a large segment of our overall population, and that population is constantly growing. Also, according to FBI statistics, the rates of violent crime have been decreasing. So as gun ownership has been increasing, rates of violent crime have been decreasing. So it would appear from a cursory examination of these statistics that law-abiding citizens in the United States think that the individual acquisition and carrying of firearms leads to a reduction in violent crime in the United States.
Wow.
These are just some overall facts. I realize every state and locale is different.
Sure.
But as long as you ask me for some overall perspective, I think that's where we are right now.
All right. Well, let's go back and review, because there were some interesting numbers that you just threw out there. 100 million gun owners in the United States own at least one firearm. Many of them own two or more. We just completed the last census. We're at 308 million people in the country. So you're saying just under one-third of the people in the United States own a firearm, and maybe more, but at least one firearm. Is that correct?
Well, yes, but there's another. When you mention the 300 million plus, I'm including children in that.
Criminals, I'm including mentally incompetent. I mean, you know, that's the whole population, yeah.
You're including the underage people who would never be able to own firearms. That 100 million refers to the law-abiding citizens who are of age.
Adults. All right.
So it's probably more than a third of the adult population. It may be a half or well over half.
Sure. And okay, so I see what you're saying. If you look at the adult population, that number might even be higher. But let me just do the other side of the argument, if I can, with you, John, because strict constitutionalists and Second Amendment right proponents, they would argue that the founding fathers meant for it to be this way. And certainly some of the numbers that you throw out here kind of lead us to think that adults want to have guns. But isn't it arrogant, at least on the part of those people living today, to think that we can know what the founding fathers wanted 200-plus years later? I mean, you know, the founding fathers were a bunch of wealthy white guys who came up with these laws, and the Second Amendment was created in a time where you didn't have automatic rifles, you didn't have, most of the population lived in the wilderness and needed a gun for not only just survival, but to protect themselves against the government, but also for survival and getting food. Times have changed. We're more urbanized now. We live in higher concentrations, and I would agree with you that the crime has gone down. There's no question about that, but that's more of a function of the aging of the population. Crime also follows age statistics, and as the country gets older, crime is going to go down. If you slice that a little bit thinner and look at the age population that would typically be involved in gangs, the fact is the number of violent crimes with guns has not decreased. It has stayed relatively the same in that age group that is going to be the ones who perpetrate crimes. So looking at all of this, why do we need to carry guns today? And in particular, why do we need semi-automatics and concealed weapons at all in today's modern world?
Well, with regard to the first part of your question regarding the time element, you have to remember that at the time of the founding of the Constitution, we didn't have internet, and we didn't have radio, we didn't have TV,
right.
But we did have the right to freedom of the press,
mm-hmm.
And that is a right that applies to the modern form of communication too, such as radio and television and internet and so on and so forth.
Sure.
Also, at the time of the Revolution, or at the time of the adoption of the Constitution, the people did bear the arms that were technologically as advanced at that time as they could have been.
Mm-hmm.
So that when you think in terms of freedom of the press as being something that has been extended down through the current time and apply that to the Second Amendment, the same reasoning would apply. Now, you also mentioned that the youth, the people who are more likely to join gangs, or would render the statistics a little bit separately from the way they're looked at by a lot of people. But the fact of the matter is that if the population is getting older, you have more older people in need of the ability to protect themselves from gangbangers and so on and so forth. So that you can look at those facts different ways. And I think that the statistics are indicating that the people themselves, by virtue of the fact that they're buying more and more guns, are looking at that from the perspective of the protection they think the firearms can afford them from these gangbangers.
All right. Well, give us some examples where firearms have been instrumental in protecting an individual or a community, John, because I know you're in touch with all of that.
Well, One that I like to cite was in the book that I wrote, Gun Saint, where a saint actually acquired guns and used them to rescue a village from a gang of terrorists back in 1860. But that same situation occurs. We have reports in newspapers and probably on the radio too of numbers of cases of people who use firearms to defend themselves. I just wrote in our newsletter the other day about a fellow in Fort Worth, Texas, who was awakened by people or by a criminal trying to break into his house, and he shot the guy to protect himself. This was in late May, but this type of thing happens all the time. I think there are thousands of cases that are reported in the newspapers in the United States, where armed citizens use firearms to protect themselves from criminals. As a matter of fact, according to Gary Kleck of Florida State University, who's a criminologist, private citizens use firearms pr- probably 2.5 million times a year in the United States to interrupt crime or to prevent crime or to stop crime or to defend themselves from criminals.
Wow. I mean, 2.5 million times firearms are used to stop or halt a crime.
The estimate with regard to that run from 800,000 to 2.5 million. And Kleck says he thinks it's 2.5 million. But
wow.
they're used, according to the most conservative statistics, 800,000 times,
mm-hmm.
and probably as much as 2.5 million times. So that guns save property, they save lives, they save innocent people from the perpetration of crime by would-be criminals or by hardened criminals.
Wow. We're talking to the dean of gun lobbyists, John Schneider. John, I mean, it's amazing you've got some remarkable facts to share with us, regardless of which side of the gun issue that you're on. I think your numbers are always fun to talk about. But we're winding out of time. We're running out of time. As we wind down, what do you want listeners to remember about bearing arms, either openly or concealed? What is the takeaway that you want everybody listening to take away from this conversation?
Guns in the hands of law-abiding citizens can save lives and often do. This is something that our opponents very often forget, but it is true. Guns save lives.
All right, and that's a powerful message. We're going to have to leave it there, John. Thank you so much for being my special guest. Now, if people want to learn more about you, learn more about gun lobbying, learn more about your positions, the blogs that you write and so forth, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, one place they can go to find out about some of the work that I've done is the website gunsaint.com, G-U-N-S-A-I-N-T, gunsaint.com.
That's gunsaint.com. John, thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you very much, Bill, and have a great day in the Golden State.
Thank you so much, and you do the same back east.